The following Agio-supported podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice. Please speak with your healthcare professional before making any treatment decisions. The guests on today's show were paid to participate in this podcast.
What's up, Cheat Code listeners? It's me, Dr. Z.
Me, Dr. C.
Dr. C, we've done a few of these, and this one's a little special.
I love this. We've never had a live audience like this. It's a home game.
It's a home game, man. We're in the Motor City.
A lot of old friends in the audience and some new ones, too.
Amazing. It's an amazing turnout. And we're familiar with Detroit, man.
Been here my whole life.
Yeah. You work a couple miles down the street.
For a long time.
Yeah, me too. It was fun. We're doing some new stuff these days, though.
We are. We're working on clinical trials.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. We're definitely still in the sickle cell space, working on clinical trials, and that's what we're here to talk about today. We're here to talk about clinical trials and what clinical trials are and what that means for this community, what that means for other communities, what that means for sickle cell in general.
Let's get to it.
Before we do, let's talk a little bit more about clinical trials.
Yeah, you were telling me a great story about pirates and clinical trials.
Oh man, Detroit, you're going to love this story. 1700, there's a surgeon on a ship, and he's noticing that some of his sailors, they're getting weak in the knees, their gums are all messed up. He's trying to figure out what's going on, and he's like, you know what, maybe I need to change their diet. Their diet sucks. So he takes 12 of them, and he sets them up, and he gives one group more green vegetables, he gives one group more meat, he gives one group lemons and oranges, and he finds out that the group of sailors that got the lemons and the oranges got better. And that was really the first clinical trial. He figured out that sailors become deficient in vitamin C.
It's amazing.
It's pretty cool. And things have changed in the last, 500 years? Things have changed tremendously with clinical trials, right? And we're going to talk a lot about how clinical trials have advanced the sickle cell landscape to date and what we have to look forward to as we move into 2024 and beyond.
Yeah, we want to get new treatments out that can help people. And to do that, we need data to show that they work. And to do that, we need clinical trials.
Absolutely.
But there's a lot of misconceptions out there, a lot of unknowns. And I think it's great we have a great panel today to talk about clinical trials from a lot of different perspectives.
Yeah. And tonight we're here to learn from this panel. We're here to learn from Detroit. We truly want to know how to make clinical trials better, how to execute them better, and how to make sure that they're meaningful to the communities that they're in. So with that, let's bring on our panelists.
Let's do it.
Agios is a biopharmaceutical company that's fueled by connections with patient communities, healthcare professionals, patients, and each other. Building on these connections and the company's unmatched leadership in the field of cellular metabolism, Agios is pioneering therapies of genetically defined diseases, a broad group of rare and more common diseases that are typically severe and life-threatening. Near term, Agios is focusing on hemolytic and acquired anemias, including sickle cell disease, pyruvate kinase or PK deficiency, and thalassemia. To learn more, visit agios.com. That's agios.com.
Now, I'm going to introduce this panel to you mostly because I have to. But you know these people, right? I don't need to tell you who these people are. But let's start with you, Ms. Davina. Why don't you tell this community who you are besides Sean's mom?
Hi, my name is Davina. I'm Sean's mom. I am also his caregiver. I also started a nonprofit called Caregivers Network that teach families and friends how to become caregivers, people with chronic diseases and illnesses. We also have a component called Sean's Closet where we take donated durable medical equipment. We clean it up and we loan it back to the community for free.
Alex?
I'm Dr. Alex, Dr. Glaros. I'm a pediatric hematologist here in Detroit, and I'm the medical director for the Comprehensive Sickle Cell Center at the Children's Hospital. And I'm probably definitely the least important person of these three people on the panel.
Last but not least, Clifton.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Clifton Kirkman. I am a 37-year-old now, just turned 37 last Thursday. Living with sickle cell, my background is in journalism and broadcasting. And with that being said, anytime that I am able to shine the light on sickle cell, bring awareness to sickle cell, that is my goal. Most recently, attending the 53rd annual convention for the SCDAA, it was there that I realized I needed to do more. Many of our lived experiences is great to be told. Sometimes you have to have that paperwork behind it in order to get in spaces and rooms to actually change things. And so most recently, I have been accepted to Purdue University to start my master's program in public health. So it's become something that is near and dear to me, but most importantly for the generations that's coming behind many of us so that they don't have to experience what we go through. Thank you.
I love that. All right, we're going to start this off really easy. We're going to start with a couple yes-no questions. Have you, Ms. Davina, as a caregiver, had somebody near and dear to you participate in a clinical trial?
Yes.
Clifton, have you or someone you know participated in a clinical trial?
Yes, I have.
Alex, have you participated as an investigator in a clinical trial?
Yes.
That's the basic part here, right? We are at least minimally qualified in the way that we all have been part of clinical trials in one way or another. I'm going to start with you, Dr. Gleros. Walk me through how clinical trials run at the Children's Hospital of Michigan. What's the setup? How does that go?
Yeah. So at the Sickle Cell Center at Children's Hospital of Michigan, I and our team really views the clinical trials or the research office as an integral part of the overall Sickle Cell Center as a way to offer new therapies and new forms of treatment to warriors. And as a result, the staff from the research office moves through our clinic pretty freely, and there's a lot of communication back and forth. So we start some of our own research studies. We have pharmaceutical companies approach us and say, hey, we have this product. We've been working on it for a long time. Always, there's been a lot of legwork going into this. And they say, is this something you would like to offer to your patients? And then I kind of review the product. There have been some that I said, I don't think this is right for my patients. There have been some that I say, yes, this is a great thing. I think there's a lot of potential here. And usually I communicate with other hematologists around the country and get their thoughts too. And then to make it short, we open the trial. And then we have a number of patients, hundreds of patients that are seen in our clinic. And I try to communicate the availability of clinical trials to anyone who's eligible, really. There's certain criteria that have to be met for every trial, and they're a little bit different. And I present what therapies are available that have been approved, what are available in just a clinical trial format, and assess their interest. And everybody has a different interest level in this kind of thing.
Very cool. Dr. C?
Yeah, so you present it to them, and then if they're interested, what happens after that?
So then they enter what's a screening period. So every trial has inclusion and exclusion criteria. So you have to, at a very basic level, the inclusion criteria would be you have sickle cell disease. Mm-hmm. A lot of times there's an age restriction. Mm-hmm. And then there are certain exclusion criteria, like unfortunately a lot of times if you're on chronic transfusions, that for certain therapies that might be an exclusion criteria. And we review, there's always a big list of inclusion and exclusion. We review that. As long as the patient meets those criteria, then the patient would have an informed consent conversation. And during that conversation, we talk about risks, we talk about benefits mm-hmm. of the therapy, we talk about the schedule that they're going to be on, what's the time commitment, we talk about what is the existing data, and that varies from trial to trial, whether it's an early phase trial, a late phase trial, and then we let the patient decide. We give them some time to read through all the documents, we explain what we can. Some patients want to talk to family members, friends about it. And then they decide yes or no, I want to participate. And if they say yes, then we enroll them. And there's a screening period where you have to do some more tests, usually things like echoes mm-hmm. or ultrasounds, certain blood tests, make sure they still meet all the criteria. And at the end of the screening period, if they met all the criteria, then they enroll in the clinical trial. If it's a drug trial, day one, they start the therapy, and then we follow them very closely. Mm-hmm. And every trial is a different length of time from start to finish, but we maintain very close communication. They have our number. If there's an issue, they call us, and that's how it goes.
So for Davina and Clifton, this is probably sounding familiar to you guys.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So when you guys had your experience with clinical trials, walk us through that. Do you have memorable experiences of a clinical trial experience that went particularly well? that you thought was really cool? You were in tune with what the doctor was telling you, things lined up nicely? Or did you have bad experiences with clinical trials? I want to hear a little bit about what your experiences have been.
So for me, and this may be jumping the gun, there's no particular trial that I've been a part that have jumped out. But what I can say is that the amount of skepticism when it comes to a clinical trial has you really wondering, am I wasting my time? It has you wondering, is this going to work for me? And the biggest thing is, what is this going to do and how is it going to affect me years down the road? And so it's always those particular topics or things in your mind that make you wonder, should I do it or should I not? Now, the more education that comes for clinical trials, I think we'll start to understand how beneficial they are. But we have to be real, we have to be honest. If we're dealing with patients living with sickle cell, that means we're dealing with folks who parents, grandparents, some relative is not that far away from when America displayed their least of concern by giving African Americans an illness or a disease, let's just call it what it is, intentionally. And so for a lot of us, when we hear of a clinical trial, that's our first mindset. What on earth are they doing? And are they being honest, open, and real? When I say that, it literally, even over the course of me being a part of clinical trials, more so, I believe in them now, because it's like for years we had nothing for sickle cell patients to get better. And unfortunately, until something else comes along, we're not going to get anything that will help us down the road unless we partake in these clinical trials, because there's no evidence, there's nothing to go by, there's no research. And I would suggest that we have to continue to talk about it, just like we have to talk about sickle cell, but talk about the importance of the clinical trials overall so that we change the mindsets of those living with sickle cell so that they can be more, or they can be less concerned and more willing to partake.
What did that for you, Clifton? It sounded like you made quite a journey there from thinking that somebody's maybe doing something bad to you to thinking clinical trials are going to help other people and answer questions. What got you to that level of trust, or is it study by study, situation by situation?
I wouldn't even say it's by situation. It's literally me being an advocate and understanding my life. I'm fighting for all of us. And I'm fighting, like I said earlier, fighting for the generations to come. That's partly why I decided to go into public health, because at the end of the day, we can all discuss how we feel going to emergency. We can all discuss, I live in Ann Arbor. What happens at that said healthcare system when I check in is not the same situation scenarios as I hear others. And so because of that is really what started to change my effect or my thinking on how it affects us, because we're limited. We don't. Sickle cell didn't happen 2 years ago or two decades. This has been the case. But we don't have enough support, enough research to figure out where do we go next. So that's what changed my opinion about it.
I'm going to ask one follow-up question, and then I'm going to go to Davina. The follow-up question is, has it been neat for you to see the end result of clinical trials in these last 5, 6, 7 years with new therapies? Has seeing new therapies come along change your perception? Did that help change your perception now that you see more options?
Yes, to a degree.
Okay.
To a bare minimum degree, yes. Because the skepticism that I have has not changed. I'm 37, thank God. But I'm 37, so I don't have time to take some random drug. In the last part of my life, I'm experiencing side effects because of it. So a lot of the conversation becomes, do you have enough evidence to make me want to take this? I hear you saying, oh, it's going to be better.
Yeah.
But so many of us that are here are on different medications. I'm on chronic transfusions.
Yep.
I'm not on any of these new drugs that have come about.
Right.
But even to that, there's no science of a one thing fixes all. Yeah, I have sickle cell, but I also had colon cancer. I also have liver disease. So what works for, and that's the thing, it's the hope. Right? Mm-hmm. It's the letdown of the hope that this is going to help me. But the reality becomes, okay, all right, I'm signing up for a clinical trial. Mm-hmm. And as Dr. Glero said, you're on chronic transfusions. Mm-hmm. That X's me out every time there's an opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, what good is that?
Yeah.
It can be a, I'm trying to be dedicated to research and science and can't.
And I see Davina agreeing, aggressively agreeing with you, because I know she's got the same beef with chronic transfusions. But Ms. Davina, share with us your experience.
My experience was a little different. We were having some complications with the current medication, and we really did not, at that particular time, have any options because we had exhausted a previous option. It was only two options. And it just so happens a month or so after we realized that we might be in a little bit of trouble and we have to really figure this out, a clinical trial opened up for a drug that was already being used with individuals with sickle cell disease. It was just a different type. So this made my decision a little easier because that's one box I don't have to check off because it's already been checked off. Mm-hmm. And then this is replacing a medication. It's not something new that I have to add to. This is in place of. So that checks off another box for me. And the research was already basically there because the medication had already been used in a sickle cell population and it was successful. So it was a randomizer. And this is where the story gets funny. It's a randomizer. We go through all the consent. I've read everything. I asked my millions of questions. Every question Clifton have said it was his doubts. As a parent, it's tenfold. Mm-hmm. Because it's not your life that you're making this decision for. It's your child's life. And your child is eventually going to grow up. And did this decision that I just make affect adulthood? Right? So we're always thinking that as a parent. Mm-hmm. So we go through everything, answer all the questions. The doctor is in a comfortable place. Mom is in a comfortable place. Sean understands what's going on. It's a randomizer. Yes, we are ready. I'm going to go put the name in the randomizer and I'll be back with the good news, right? Mm-hmm. 10 minutes later, the doctor comes back and she is not looking happy. Now, I don't know what to do. What am I thinking? What is really going on? And she goes, I have good news and bad news. What do you want first? Give me the bad news, right? Mm-hmm. Because we have these inclusions and exclusions. She goes, I put you in a randomizer, and the randomizer chose the same drug you're already taking. Mm-hmm. And so I go, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Because now as a parent, I've gone through all of these emotions. I've done all this reading. I've done all this research on my own. And now I have hope. Mm-hmm. That my situation can be a little better for my child. And now you're telling me we're stuck in the same place that we are currently. Mm-hmm. And she said, but after 9 months, we can switch to this new medication. So we just have to get through this 9-month period. And I think we can do it. And I said, you have more faith than I do. Mm-hmm. And I am going to lean on that. And we'll do it. So we started the clinical trial. We did switch over to the new drug, and it was successful. Awesome. And it's a drug we're still taking today.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I hear you guys, man. That is a lot of, not only pressure, that's a lot of stress. It's that hope and the letdown, and it's those waves. Dr. C, you spent a lot of time running clinical trials down the street. I'm going to pull you in here, and maybe you can walk us through a little bit, in general, the challenges that you saw running the clinical trials, and then going over to industry, and the challenges maybe you see on that side.
Yeah, so there's a lot of challenges. I think for good reason, there's a lot of regulation around clinical trials, and that means that all the T's have to be crossed, all the I's have to be dotted. There's lots of committees, things have to go through. If you're a site, you have to work with the sponsor to process all of that and get contracts set up. And it's really a long process. And then you get the trial open, and then you have to identify patients who you think it might help and talk to them. And a lot of times people aren't interested, and fair enough. I think a lot of times the trials are designed with randomizations, and you have maybe a placebo, so you don't know if you're going to get the drug or not. Do you want to go on a trial and spend all this time when you're getting a placebo? So it can definitely be a challenge recruiting patients and keeping them on the trial and making the trial work for them. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of work goes into it. I think it can be incredibly rewarding when you get to the end and the medicine works mm-hmm. better. And now it's something that everybody's going to be able to use after that. Now taking it from the other side, from the sponsor side, I think it's a lot of the same things, mm-hmm. but you have a lot less day-to-day FaceTime with the people who are maybe benefiting from the trial or participating in the trial. So you're working from your desk, talking to the sites, trying to get things going. Mm-hmm. And often you feel like you can't get anything going. Mm-hmm. That's a big frustration. I think, too, things happen during trials. People have side effects. Even sometimes people die on trials. And that's a horrible thing. And trying to understand, is that because of the drug? Were they on the drug or were they on the placebo? Does this drug still have the potential to benefit people more than it could harm people? I think that's something we're always doing. And it's a lot of responsibility. And you have to take that very seriously, that all of your trial participants, they're volunteering altruistically to help answer this question of whether this drug can be beneficial, and you need to protect them. And I think that's always a big weight.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you. And I feel like one of the really interesting things is that we have gotten to a point where it's very purposeful that there is a lot of transparency when we talk about clinical trials, when you're on clinical trials, to monitor side effects, to tell people what could happen, what may not happen, and what's likely to happen, right? So I think that transparency can work both ways, but it's important to have, especially with what you told us, Clifton, around the distrust, right? You want to make sure that patients are fully aware of everything that's going on. So Dr. Gleros, let me pull you in. When you go through the thought process of approaching a patient for a clinical trial, what does that thought process look like? Are you sorting patients in your head based on need, based on symptoms, based on the drug itself, based on how do you go through that process in your mind?
I think it's all of those things. Every single patient is unique, and every single drug that's in a clinical trial is unique. Every drug that's on the market is unique for sickle cell disease, which are not many, right? And then there's this piece in the background that you want the trial to go well in the sense that you want the data to be good. And so there is a certain, you want a patient who the expectation is that they're going to come in for their appointments and complete the trial. Mm-hmm. Every patient has the right to drop out of the trial, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm very upfront about that. If you want to stop this, you can stop it. But I want you to be committed to it up front. And in terms of parsing through which patient is best for a clinical trial, I think it depends on what's the type of trial, right? If this is an early phase trial, and to Clifton's point, we don't have a lot of data, I probably am going to lean more towards a patient who has tried other things and failed, mm-hmm. and they're quote unquote more desperate for something. And I can say, we have this available. I don't have a lot of data. We wouldn't be doing it if we didn't think it was going to be good. But a lot of drugs in these early phase trials don't make it to the next phase because they don't work as well as we thought they would. If it's a later phase trial where we do have some efficacy data, we have some good safety data, then it really comes down to it always comes down to the patient preference, but maybe even more so here, because I could offer you a drug that's on the market. These are the benefits. These are the side effects that we see. I can offer you this. I'm not going to have as much data available as that approved drug, mm-hmm. but maybe I like it more for this reason. Maybe so far we haven't seen side effects like we see on the other one. And some patients like that. Some patients don't like that, and that's totally fine.
I think you brought up a really good point about if you're going on a trial, it's a lot of work. There's a lot of things you have to fill out, and if you go into it, you should be committed to it. But if you get on the trial and circumstances change, or you just don't like the trial, or things happen, you can always withdraw. And I think we have that happen, and I think that's an important safety feature in the trials, is that at any time people can decide they don't want to participate in this anymore, and even say, don't keep my data.
So, Clifton, going to you for a minute here. When you learn about clinical trials, or you hear about clinical trials that are happening, how do you usually hear about them? Does it come up at your doctor's appointment? Does it come up somewhere else? How does the awareness build around what trials are going on?
I don't know about anyone else, but I typically hear about trials either directly from my clinic, mm-hmm. but realistically, oftentimes it comes from the Sickle Cell Association of America Michigan chapter. Mm-hmm. Hey, did you hear about this? What are you doing? Why are you not on it? And make sure you tell somebody else about it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And if we had to guess who that might be, that would be none other than Dr. Wanda Whitten-Cherney and Mrs. Jerica McBride, who are diligent in making sure that we stay aware of those clinical trials that come out. Because again, we're dealing with a population where many of us, especially us older patients, we don't even live in the same area anymore. Right. And unfortunately, Dr. Cherney is no longer our childhood hematologist, pediatric hematologist, but she makes it her business to make sure that we stay aware.
I was going to ask you the same question, but I feel like you're going to give me the same answer, Davina.
No, I'm not.
No? Okay, tell me.
My information comes from one of the best hematologists at the clinic, the one sitting next to me.
Oh.
She's talking about Dr. Callahan.
Okay, maybe I should have said to the left. So I get information from two places. One is the clinic, but the other is when I go to conferences and when I sit in on meetings, I listen. And a lot of patients might talk about a clinical trial or they might talk about something new. But a lot of conferences now are giving out website information where you can go and look into clinical trials on your own. Mm-hmm. I'm a little nosy. I'm a parent, a little overbearing, so I go check out the information myself first. That way, when it is presented, I've already have a background. It might not be much, but I know the basics, and then I'm expecting the healthcare provider to fill in the blanks.
I love that. That was a very cute moment, by the way. That was very heartwarming. I totally agree. We're in the Motor City. You've got a fantastic hematologist running your sickle cell center for pediatrics. You've got Dr. Wanda Whitten-Cherney. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty good setup here in the Motor City. You guys, it's pretty cool to see that evolving.
I think it is really important to talk to your doctor about the clinical trials because they know your medical history. They know what other medicines you're on. And so they're able to give better input than other people can. And it's also nice to have somebody like Dr. Cherney, who's really a sickle cell expert and a sounding board and can give you another perspective as well. So
those are the reasons that you would agree to do a clinical trial is based on the person that presented that information to you.
One thing that I've noticed too, so we were briefly talking at dinner about when we're inpatient, a lot of times we don't get to see our everyday specialists.
Right.
So it's important that you keep that line of communication open between your assigned pediatrician, I'm still stuck on pediatrician, but your assigned hematologist to take care of you, but not just them. It is important for you to talk to the rest of your doctors because more times than we like, information does not get communicated to the proper channels. So I don't just have a hematologist. Mm-hmm. I don't just have a neurologist. Mm-hmm. They all need to be updated because God forbid someone forgets something somewhere and now we're in a situation of, oh, we didn't think about it, or now you're left with this effect.
For sure.
I'm going to tell briefly, I'm not going to say what it was, but being on chronic transfusions, I honestly believe one of the drugs that I was on, later down the road, they found out had gastrointestinal issues. 20 plus years later, I end up with colon cancer. And oftentimes I wonder, is it related to the fact that I had IBS that was caused and created because of the medicine that I took? So as adults and as parents, you have to take control over what the information that you know. And don't just let anybody make a suggestion and you just go off of it. Or in other hindsight, or not hindsight, but in other situations, parents, you have to teach your children now when they're kids on what's going on so that they know when they're grown, oh, have you ever done this X, Y, and Z? Yeah, as a kid, I was on this and this. How did it work? Did it work for you? Because that becomes a vital situation that could happen between life and death, or you end up in a hospital.
It's a great point. I think awareness is key. Right. And I think all of us will agree. I was going to say that for me, at least, and I think that Dr. C and Dr. Galeros will agree, the experts on sickle cell disease are the patients. Right. And truly, we're learning from the patients. I was talking to Davina earlier today about Sean and how much we've all learned from Sean, right? Like that's contributed to our ability to be a good sickle cell physician. So I think that it's a really good point that patients are experts on their own body. They know what works for them. But it's really important for doctors to be able to give information to patients so that they can make informed choices.
I want to change gears a little bit and talk about the future. And I'll start with Davina. What is your hope for sickle cell for the future? And how could clinical trials play a role in that?
As a parent, my hope is that we can have a universal cure. That's number one. But if we have to have a plan B, my plan B will be that we have a choice for medications, that our kids are not limited by the medications that's out there or the medications that suit their situation. And this shameless plug that I always throw out there is we definitely need drugs for individuals on chronic transfusion therapy. We need to focus on sickle cell as a whole and not just select populations. It is easier to treat some populations of people living with sickle cell disease, but what about the more difficult cases? Because there are some difficult cases out there kind of gets passed over. So as a parent, my voice and the voice that I tell other parents they need to lift is whatever your kid is going through, shout it from the mountaintops, because that's the only way that somebody can say, let me look at something to change this situation.
Let's keep that question going. I like that question, Dr. C.
Let's hear your hopes for the future, Alex.
My hope for the future, I talk to the staff in our clinic a lot about trying to bring in more resources to our clinic, not just to help with medical problems and treat problems as they come up, but to support the whole patient. And that means I don't want patients to just survive our pediatric years and then go on to adulthood. I want them to live. I want them to thrive as adults. I want them to have jobs, go to college, have families, whatever they want to do. And that doesn't just mean treat pain in our pediatric hospital and keep them from getting infections and getting them to 18 and then see you later. That means I want them to do well in school. I want them to be able to go to school because their pain is better managed. I want them to be able to study at home, get jobs as teenagers and whatever, because they're able to. And clinical trials are a huge part of that because we have therapies available for sickle cell disease, but there still is a lot of patients out there suffering. And I think even the companies that have put out the approved therapies, they're still working on the next therapy, right? Because those therapies are not perfect. And so there's more work we need to do. And so I think it comes down to we need more and we need better.
Lifton?
I ditto both of them. But one thing that I hope and wish for is obviously us to continue to talk about this. But we can talk about it all day long and it still not change. I hope that the future, that some way, somehow, laws are passed. Some way, somehow, when we check into the hospital, not only are we greeted with respect, but let's go to the schooling and the education. There's no God-given reason, in my opinion, that I should have a doctor who I see based upon whatever, who asks the question, how long have you had sickle cell? And my question becomes, how long have you been a doctor? Because at this point, you need to continue with education, or I need to take your degree. And I often, and I kid, but I don't. When I'm inpatient, I don't care how much schooling you have. Somebody at some school needs to give me an honorary doctorate degree in living with sickle cell and talking about what it is. So I hope that it becomes, and yes, I'm going to say what most people don't say. I hope it becomes as important to the world as cancer and breast cancer and all of these other illnesses that affect everyone else that's living, and not just the, oh, it's sickle cell. We need the money. We need the funding. We need the dollars. And we need those that are in power to speak on behalf of us who cannot make it into those rooms.
Wow. You can ask these guys. I rarely am speechless. That was really good, man. I feel like we should just stop the podcast right there. It was a mic drop. I think that we're coming to an end here. And first of all, I want to thank all of you. I think that a community for sickle cell disease is built on many components. Of course, the healthcare system is there. It has to be there. But it requires motivated, fired up individuals who are dedicated and by all means necessary, ready to drive change forward. Whether it's scientific change, whether it's social change, it requires people who are fired up about it. And the fact that this room is full today means that it's happening, right? And it's happening because of the system that was really built by Dr. Charles Witten and is being carried forward by his daughter and by hematologists that have stood on Dr. Charles Witten's shoulders here in Detroit. I want to leave us with a call to action, which is I want you guys as panelists, as ambassadors here in Detroit, representing different groups that contribute to the awareness around sickle cell disease, to promise me that whether the lights are on or not, we're going to keep having these conversations. In every room we go to, we're going to talk about clinical trials, sickle cell disease, how change comes. And, you know, we're going to keep pushing. We're going to keep making sure that we have uncomfortable conversations and important conversations. Does that sound like a deal?
Absolutely.
All right. Dr. C, anything you want to add?
This was fantastic. Thanks for everybody coming out. Thanks to all these great panelists. I think we touched on a lot of important points. I think there's probably a lot of things we missed, so happy to have discussions offline. And like you said, let's keep this conversation going.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Cheat Codes listeners. Unfortunately, Dr. Wanda Wittenscherney, who's a giant in the sickle cell community here in Detroit, was unable to attend our live podcast in Detroit. Fortunately, however, one of our podcast producers was able to interview her, and you're going to hear that interview right now.
My name is Wanda Wittenscherney, and I am the CEO and medical director of the Sickle Cell Disease Association of America, Michigan chapter.
First question, why are clinical trials important for the sickle cell community in the U.S. and internationally?
Clinical trials are really important for any disease state. And I would say that they're particularly important in sickle cell disease because this is a disease that's been so neglected. And if you look at even internationally, what most people understand is that the vast majority of people with sickle cell disease don't live in the United States. And unfortunately, with people that live other places, they're not able to get the kind of care that we can get in the United States, which is even not optimal here in the United States. You know, I have to take a little tangent because I don't ever talk about sickle cell disease without talking about my dad, Dr. Charles Witten, who was a real pioneer in sickle cell disease. He was involved in clinical trials with salicylate poisoning and with iron poisoning. And so it actually, the way they treat aspirin poisoning now or toxicity is really what came out of one of his clinical trials. And of course, iron poisoning helped to lead to the development of Desferal that we use now. So if you look back at the history, clinical trials have always been really important.
Thank you. How do we all as a community advance science for sickle cell disease?
The first answer is the obvious answer. If you need to know how to do something and it has to do with money, we need funding. And we're all aware of the discrepancy in funding for sickle cell disease. And I think the most famous disease we compare it to is cystic fibrosis. So it takes money. It also takes awareness. And it also takes scientists who are interested in sickle cell disease. So one of the things that we have to do is pick up on these people early on in their career, because while sickle cell disease is a devastating disease, it's also a fascinating disease. And we know so much about the pathophysiology that I think Dr. Betty Pace has a special program where she mentors clinical investigators. And I think those are the kinds of things that we need. And I think in terms of education for healthcare providers, they most of the time, most of them see sickle cell patients or sickle cell warriors when they're at their worst, when they're in the emergency room, where they're in the inpatient setting, and when they're not getting good care. So those are not the friendliest patients in the world. But I think if we could expose healthcare providers to patients who are in the outpatient setting, getting good care, then that's the only way that you could possibly understand how absolutely rewarding it is and how appreciative sickle cell warriors are when they really get good care.
What are some of the advancements that have been made in sickle cell care as a result of clinical studies?
That's a really important question. And one of the disadvantages that I have is that I wasn't able to be there live. Of course, I was with my second battle with COVID. And so I wasn't able to hear what other panelists said. So I'm sure I'm going to repeat some things, but I'm just really honored by the fact that you're interested in my particular thoughts. But I think probably most of what I'm going to say was already said, but I'm going to say it again anyway, just for emphasis. Okay, so the first thing that comes to my mind is the penicillin prophylaxis study. And that was responsible for us decreasing the deaths from pneumococcal sepsis in young babies that have sickle cell disease. And another, of course, key study was the MSH trial that gave us FDA approval of hydroxyurea. And I think it's important to note that both of those trials were stopped early because it was so obvious during the trial that this was going to make a difference. And so those were really significant advancements. And then there was Baby Hug that led to the FDA approval or the NHLBI recommendation that we start hydroxyurea when children are 9 months old. And I think, in fact, that one of the attendees, I don't know whether the mother or the warrior mentioned it, was actually a part of the Baby Hug trial. So I think that that person, I hope they stood up and raised their hand and said, hey, look at me, I advanced science, you know? And when you talk to warriors, there's a particular warrior that actually stated the fact that he entered a clinical trial because he wanted to help the community. And so it's important to know that this is something that's going to help the entire community. Then, of course, I think many people know that bone marrow transplant, the first person that was cured with bone marrow transplant was somebody who had leukemia. They were getting the transplant because they had leukemia, but they also had sickle cell disease. So they accidentally cured the sickle cell disease. And then, of course, there had to be clinical trials that there had been clinical trials that showed that bone marrow transplant was good for leukemia, but we needed to prove that it was going to be good and the benefits were going to outweigh the risks for sickle cell disease. And then now we're talking about the genetic cure. And of course, the FDA approval of the two mechanisms for a genetic cure for sickle cell disease were all preceded by successful clinical trials.
What are some of the challenges for investigators when conducting studies?
I think the biggest challenge for investigators is, number one, getting patients enrolled. And number two, keeping them enrolled. And I think that a lot of that has to do with the general mistrust of sickle cell warriors in terms of the medical community. That's where education becomes so important to help warriors to understand how necessary these clinical trials are in order to advance treatment. And I think that it's important for them to understand, to have a conversation with the investigator about what is the trial all about, to get all their questions answered. I was asked at one conference one time that everybody was going to describe what they thought about sickle cell warriors. And some, oh, they're brave and they're loving and they're caring and they're, and when it came to me, I said, they're skeptical and they have really good reason to be skeptical. And so I think that the enrollment process is negatively impacted by the skepticism. And I think that warriors just need to be assured that if they enroll in a clinical trial, they can always drop out. It doesn't need to be presented as high pressure sales pitch. And I think one of the problems is that sometimes the first time that a warrior hears about a clinical trial is when the investigator walks in the office with the consent form that has all this legalese and, you know, it looks like you're getting ready to or mortgage your house or something. And I think that's something that's really changing and that's really good that now we actually have warriors at the table with the actual development of the clinical trial. And I think that will really help with enrollment.
What should patients expect when participating in clinical trials?
I think they should expect an open and honest conversation with the investigator. I think that they should be sitting down when they have it and looking the warrior in the eye and not looking rushed and feeling like I'm here and I'm going to explain this to you and I'm going to answer all of your questions. And once again, I think it's important that they not feel pressured and that they understand. I think the conversation could actually include some of the successful clinical trials and how they've made a tremendous impact on how individuals living with sickle cell disease do because of these advancements.
From your perspective, why do patients decide to participate in a clinical trial and why do they not participate?
I think that I've kind of touched on that a little bit already, but I think that sometimes they choose to participate because they want to be proactive. They want to be involved in the actual advancement of the care of the illness that they happen to have. But I think sometimes, again, the reasons that they decide not to is because of this mistrust, because of this whole idea you hear all the time, guinea pig. I don't want to be a guinea pig. And then I think also when you have a double-blind placebo-controlled study, then half of the participants are going to be on the quote-unquote fake drug. I think sometimes patients think, you know, I don't want to be on the fake drug. I want to be on the real drug, or I want to wait until after the clinical trial is over and see how everybody does and get on the medication when it's FDA approved. But one of the problems is it's never going to get FDA approved if we don't get involvement in the clinical trial. So I think that's something that people really need to understand.
Thank you. And finally, question 7, specifically, what should clinical trial sites know about why patients participate or don't participate in their studies?
I think I've addressed that issue, but I know that other panelists have discussed the same thing. So the main thing that I want to add to this is the importance of the community-based organization, because we're the boots on the ground. We're the trusted people in the community. And I think that it's so important for the community-based organizations to be educated about the clinical trials, because the first thing that the warriors are going to do is going to pick up the phone and call their CBO and say, what do you think about this trial? So I think in that way, the community-based organizations can help researchers understand what the thought process is. And then the other thing, of course, is to ask the warriors. And that's something that is, I think, happening a lot more. I think that really the stars are aligning for sickle cell disease. And a lot of that has to do with the whole idea that they have that there's nothing for us without us, and having their involvement leading to more commitment.
To all of our panelists, thank you so much. This is absolutely not going to be the last time you're on Cheat Codes. We're going to keep the conversation going. And for the Motor City, thank you for showing up today. We appreciate you all. With that, peace.